Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Patriots 4th and 2. I am Russ Goldman, as always, from Pats Confidential. Along with me, I have fellow PatsFans.com bloggers, Steve Balestrieri, Damian Jarrett, and Derek Havens. We are here for the next hour with you. Going to be talking about the Patriots. It is bye week, and we have a great show planned. We have two scheduled guests at 7:15. We are expecting to hear from Adam Jones from ESPNBoston.com, who has the Adam Jones Show, and he also does the Patriots postgame show on Patriots.com. At 7:45, we're going to have on Mark Bertrand from 98.5 The Sports Hub. You might be familiar with him doing the sports updates on the Felger and Mass Show, and he also has his own show on Saturday with Chris Gasper. It's the Bertrand and Gasper Show. So we have two excellent guests that I have great questions for to really talk about the Patriots during the bye week. Just some issues that we can go over with that might surprise some people. So, but before we get into talking to our guests, we're also going to do throughout the show, we're gonna grade the Patriots' performance so far. We're gonna do mid-season grades. We're gonna grade the offense, defense, special teams, and coaching staff if we have enough time. We'll do our best to get through it because we do have two guests, but we're gonna do that. But before we get started going through the grades and asking their guys their thoughts on the different positions, I'm gonna start with Damian to give us a little news segment and let us know what's going on with the Patriots. Damian, it's all yours.
Hey guys, it's been an extremely slow week in Patriots Nation. There was a bit of news at the start of the week when Falk, Brace, and Dedrick all came off with all started practicing. They now have 3 weeks to be activated and put onto the active roster. Otherwise, they have to go on season-ending IR. We had a handful of workouts over the first week over the bye week. Most notably, Trevor Price, a 14-year veteran, was brought in by the Patriots. I'm pretty sure that's just the team doing their usual due diligence on the free agents out there. And the Patriots will be attending T.O.'s media workout this week, so read what you will into that.
Well, that's great, Damian. Before we move on to our grades, I want to ask each one of you, how would you feel about T.O. possibly coming to the Patriots? Again, they're just attending the workout. But I will start with you, Derek. Would you be interested in the Patriots actually signing T.O.?
No, Russ, I probably wouldn't be. I always want to improve my roster in any way possible. And, you know, he might be better than the fourth or fifth guy we have on the roster. But at this point, I just think, you know, I think he still had a pretty good season last year, but I just wouldn't be interested in adding him to this team with the group we've built up. I just don't really think he adds much value. And I think if anything, he hurts you more than he helps you.
You know, I tend to agree with you on that. You know, and listen, it would actually bring T.O. and Ocho Cinco together. I don't know how that would work. Steve, what are your thoughts on T.O.?
Not interested. I've never been a big T.O. fan. I've always respected his talent, which is immense, but I've always thought that he's a locker room chemistry killer, and he's done it everywhere he's gone, just about. I mean, San Francisco, Dallas, Philadelphia. I mean, I'm not interested in him at all. If that's the case, if he's better than our fourth and fifth guy, so be it. I'd rather stick with the fourth or fifth guy.
You know, like I said with Derek, I tend to agree with that statement. Damian, do you have any thoughts on that? Would you like to see him come to the Patriots?
Yeah, I think we're going to have an all-round agreement here again. I absolutely wouldn't waste my time with him. I don't think he's got anything to offer us. It'd be interesting to hear what you guys think on Kevin Falk, because I've been very active on the Falk opinion front on Twitter recently. And for me, he's a player now that I feel we need to really move past. I don't feel at the moment we have a space for him on the roster. And we are one injury away at running back from it being a need, possibly. But I feel that Vereen's not really getting on the field, not only because maybe we don't trust him enough yet, but he doesn't really need to. I think we have that three-back rotation pretty set out in stone, and I feel that Falk right now would be a wasted roster spot.
Listen, Damon, that's a great topic. Steve, what do you think about Kevin Falk and being put on the active roster?
Boy, that's a tough one there because Falk has always been such a consummate professional. And he obviously has the coaches and Tom Brady's trust. My only concern would be, you know, how effective would he be? I mean, I understand they're going to look at him. They're not going to rush him back into anything. But at this point in his career, at his age, would he still have the same speed he would? I don't know. I think that they ought to look at keeping him around at least for the next couple of weeks, strictly because he could be a mentor, as he has been with the younger guys. But that's a tough call. I guess I would have to see how he's playing on the field and then make a decision. I know that's going to be a tough call because he's been here. He goes all the way back to the Parcells era.
Yeah, he goes way back. I'll give you my thoughts in a second, but I would like Derek to chime in on Kevin Falk. What are your thoughts?
Well, when you talk about someone like Kevin Falk, who's been so productive for this team, been a leader, and I think someone used the word mentor. I think that's perfect, a perfect way to describe him. He's been around the team. From what I've been told, what's been reported, he actually has lost a couple pounds. I think he's thinned down a little bit, about 10 pounds. I think someone was saying that, that would be to get some speed and agility back, because he has probably lost that with age and with the knee injury, and when you're talking about someone like Kevin Falk, I think that it's hard to go ahead and get rid of him, especially when he's so entrenched on this team and in this roster, and he's been one of the backbones for this decade. But I would still keep him around for this year, and I'm not really sure who I would take off the roster at that point. That's going to be for someone like Bill Belichick and the front office to go ahead and evaluate that. But for this season, I think that if he wants to be on the team, he's worked hard to get back, and I think that he wouldn't be around if Belichick and Co. weren't seriously interested in keeping him around.
Guys, it's a real tough call for me as well. I was just thinking about it as you guys were talking, and I'm split on this. I would want to see how he actually looks to see if he can actually be back to, remotely to what he used to be. He was great on third downs. He was a third down guy. Danny Woodhead, can he fill that role now? He certainly did last year. I guess I'm going to chicken out here and just say I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see. Going to see how he is. Because I could go either way on this. If he's not where he needs to be, I do think that they need to cut bait. I know that's difficult. I would put him on the staff. I would make him a coach. If he has not, if he does not get to where he needs to be. If he is, I think you have to go with him. His experience does offer a great deal. And I do like Woodhead. It's a tough call. It's a tough call. And Damian, thanks for bringing up a great subject to really get us going. I was really going to go into these grades, but I want to throw out another question to you guys. Subject here in Boston, which was huge last weekend, and was about Wes Welker's contract during the bye week. I don't think that this should have become a story. Because I understand that it's the bye week and reporters are looking for stories. But isn't this a subject that we really should be talking about at after the year and just see how Welker goes? I'll throw this first to you, Steve, because this actually bothered me hearing all this talk about Welker. I think it was more forced than a real discussion because this wasn't coming from Welker.
No, it wasn't. And again, it was just bye week talk because they were off last week, and a lot of the writers were looking for something to talk about. And what better thing to talk about than Wes Welker, since what a season he's been having. But no, it's not coming from Welker. And honestly, I don't think his contract is going to be that big an issue. I don't think Welker is the kind of guy that's going to be looking for a ridiculous amount of money. I think he's going to sign for less than people really think he will. I really don't see him trying to hold out for big money. And I think he's very happy here, and I don't think he's even going to, you know, look anywhere else.
You know, Steve, I tend to agree with you on that, and I think that's what bothered me about this discussion this week. I could see them really making a deal, and they could be working on a deal right now. We don't know this, and this is just all speculation. It actually started with an interview on the Dan Patrick Show with Welker, and he asked him the question, and it just took off from there. And then, of course, Kraft went on WEEI, and when I heard Kraft talk, I didn't think that, you know, that it was going to turn into even a bigger story, but it started to snowball from that point about that possibly that Kraft didn't want to, you know, give him the very last dollar. It was people reading into it, and I didn't agree with that. Personally, I didn't think it should have even come up this week, but again, it was reporters really digging for stories. Derek, did you hear any of that this week with Welker?
Yeah, I did, Russ, and I'm glad you guys brought it up because it is an interesting subject, and I agree with you that I think that the media definitely put some gasoline on the fire. You know, it really wasn't even a fire to begin with. You know, I think Welker, it's something that, you know, could be focused on heavily, and I think he's done a good job kind of deflecting any, you know, any of his real thoughts on it and kind of just putting that distraction aside. But I think during this week, you know, a lot of the media members were talking, you know, about it a lot. And, you know, that could cause problems, although I doubt it will. But it is an interesting thing to talk about because when you're talking about someone like Welker, you know, great production. Since he's been here in 2007, he started out with three straight 100 receiving, 100 reception seasons. Sorry, excuse me. Then last season, you know, coming off his, you know, his knee injury, he leads the league in drops. And then, you know, this year he's on pace for, you know, an incredible season right now. Through six games played, he has 51 receptions, 785 yards, and his average has actually gone way up to 15.4 yards per reception, which is about four or five yards per reception higher than his career average. But, you know, for me, I'm a little worried because he's 32. He is towards the back end of his career. I think most of us could agree with that. And, you know, I wouldn't want to give him a five-year contract, which I think he could be looking for. Steve, I kind of disagree. I think he might be looking for some big money, especially if he does have this big year. I would be interested in giving him more of a Moss-type deal, if that's possible, you know, like the 3 years for 27, about nine apiece. But when you're talking about a 4 or 5 year deal for 40 or 50 million with big guaranteed money, it definitely scares me.
You know, it definitely scares me too, Derek. And I actually think it's a good discussion. I just think that the timing is just not, you know, it's just not needed. And again, it's a sexy story. It, you know, and I just think it was really became a media creation this week. And you know, if we do want to talk about it a little bit, I mean, I'm not there to really go into the deep on it right now, but I think it's something that as we get further into the season and probably the off season, we can have a great discussion about it. We can break everything down because it's possible that he might want more years. You know, he might want 5 years. But again, I'm not really into talking about stuff that is really off season talk. Damien, I'm not sure if this talk made you in the UK. Did you hear much about the Welker talk?
We did through Twitter channels, you know, and if you only had to really type it in something like Google, and you could see the talk coming up. And again, I think that, Derek and Steve both touched on it. It really is just, I think, media speculation in the bye week. They're fishing for stories. All the players are away, seeing their relatives, seeing their family. There really isn't anything to really talk about in the bye week. All the other teams are busy doing their thing. They're not trash talking, and the press like come up with all these creative stories and just to try and generate some paper sales and some interest in what is otherwise a very boring week. And I pretty much agree with Derek on his analysis of the whole contract situation. I don't think you're going to get more than three good years out of Welker, two maybe three at best, and. And if he's sitting there looking for a long-term deal, I don't. And it's big money, and he looks at what Calvin Johnson's getting and what Fitzgerald is getting, and he feels that after this season he deserves that, then you're going to have an issue, and then you start saying, well, do we tag him and sit him on a year on the average, you know, on the average wide receiver salary, and see what he does for that year, and then decide, or do we work, or is he going to be able to accept a small time deal? Which, I mean, I think 2 or 3 years max is what we need to really be offering him. And hopefully, I do agree with Steve to an extent where he says, I think Welcome may be willing to take that, and I really hope he is, because I don't think we should be offering him anything more than 3 years, in my opinion.
Okay, great. Derek, did you have something else that you wanted to add to this discussion?
Just one thing I wanted to say was that I think that even though it is an interesting discussion and it could go, you know, either way, I think most people would think he's going to stay. The Patriots are not going to let him walk away for nothing. He will be, if the deal cannot, you know, get hammered out, he will be franchised. I mean, it's not like they're just going to let him walk. So there is no immediate danger there. But, you know, could you get into one of those Mankin situations, you know, where he is holding out? You know, I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and it can be tough. And like Damien just said, you know, when you're talking about big contracts, you know, I mean, there are other guys on the free agent market, and, you know, I'm sure there will be a team that's willing to give him that kind of money, and I'm not sure he's going to want to give the Patriots a hometown discount when he is looking for his last contract, you know, really his last big contract before his season's up or his career's up. And I think he did give a little bit of a discount last time. So you're really looking at a pretty interesting situation moving forward, but I don't think it's anything we need to really go into much further right now.
Russ, we have Adam on the line.
Yep, I saw that, and I agree with you on that, Derek, that I think it's something that we can discuss at a later date. But without further ado, I want to invite on to the show Adam Jones. Adam Jones is the host of The Adam Jones Show on ESPNBoston.com and also the host of the Patriots postgame show on Patriots.com. Adam, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, no problem, guys. What's going on?
Nothing much. We're just talking some good bye week talk, and I've got some good questions for you, and the guys might have some questions along with me. I have Steve, Derek, and Damien. We are all PatsFan.com bloggers, and we've just been talking about the Pats. And Damien actually called you last week, Adam, on your Patriots postgame show from London.
Oh, cool.
So he's very familiar with you, and he I know has a question for you, but I'll start with you. We were just talking about Welker, but I really want to talk to you about something that you and I talked about on your show. The Patriots defense. You brought out a question that you did not feel that the Patriots defense is a championship style unit yet, and I would agree with you. But my question for you is, what would you need to see to convince you that it is a championship defense?
Well, I just think consistency. I mean, more performances like what we saw in that Dallas game. I was encouraged by what we saw in the Dallas game, certainly more so than what we saw in the Jets game before that. I think you string, you know, 3-4 performances together like that, starting with Pittsburgh and then the Giants and the Jets. I mean, they're in, you know, kind of the meat of their schedule right now. And if you string together some performances like that, then I would say I'd be sold if the defense continues to play like it does in that Dallas game. But I think that's been more the exception to the rule over the past year plus. And I don't know, I guess that would be my answer. You know, if they continue to get third down stops, they continue to play well in the red zone, they continue to force turnovers, and they string it together, then, yeah, I think I could be sold on this defense. I'm just not ready to take the plunge at this point.
You know, neither am I, but I am leaning that way based on what I actually talked to you about on your show, was the fact that if I still see improvement on the third down defense, and I see them continually taking away a weapon from an offense, that to me shows me something. That's a difference maker. I haven't seen them week to week last season and in several seasons really take away something from a defense. From an offense. Would that impress you if they keep on taking away, say, like a Jason Witten every week.
Yeah, I mean, that's an encouraging thing. And, you know, that's what Bill Belichick and the Patriots salad days when they were winning championships, that's what they used to do consistently. You could count on, all right, well, this is what this team does well. The Patriots will take it away. And I think we've seen more of that, but mostly it's been, you know, taking away the opposing team's tight end. They did it with Gates. They did it with Keller. And as you pointed out, Russ, they did it with Witten last week. So I'd like to see it get a little bit more diverse, maybe starting with Mike Wallace this week against Pittsburgh, and that could be a bit of wishful thinking. But, you know, if they can be a bit more diverse with it and continue to take away what another team does best, I would certainly say that'd be an encouraging sign, absolutely.
Okay, great. Now, here's just a basic question about the Patriots, because we're going to talk a little bit later about our midseason grades, and I'll just get that from you in a little bit. But overall, since we are at the bye week, what are your concerns right now for the team moving forward? What concerns you?
Well, I mean, I guess in general with the defense, it would be the secondary. I would still have concerns about that. I thought even last week when things looked better, I thought McCourty has still struggled pretty consistently. The tackling remains a concern for me, though most of that lies in the secondary, and I think it's been shored up with Edebu moving into the starting or the starting secondary at that safety spot opposite Pat Chung. But I would say defensively, that would be my main question with the defense. Offensively, I think this one is a bit under the radar. You know, offensively, I still want to know if the Patriots can exploit a defense outside the numbers. And this week will probably be a good test against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to try to take away the middle of the field, take away the tight ends. They're not going to let you run. So can the Patriots exploit them outside the numbers? They've certainly had a lot of success with that in the past against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Can continue to do that this week with Deion Branch and Welker and Ocho or whomever outside. Can they take or beat a team outside the numbers is something offensively that I would like to see, because in the postseason the last couple of years, or, you know, the commonality between that Baltimore game, that Jets game, is they weren't able to do that.
You know, that's actually a great point, and they have been able to exploit Pittsburgh in the past, and I'll actually be looking for that, and then obviously they really haven't stretched the field, so that will be something to look for. Do you have concerns over the play of the offensive line the last 2 weeks, or do you think this is just the Ryan brothers?
I think it's more the Ryan brothers, and not to say that I have no level of concern about the offensive line, because I think another area that has reared its ugly head in the Patriots' postseason losses and starting in the Super Bowl against the New York Giants in Super Bowl 42, I think the offensive line has struggled in some of those games. But I would chalk up these in the regular season more to the Ryan brothers. I mean, you're going against a team or a couple of defenses in the Jets and the Cowboys that'll get after you. They'll bring pressure from different areas. You don't always know where it's coming from. And I don't know, especially in that Jets game, I didn't think the pressure was as bad as people were making it out to be. I thought for the most part the Patriots did a pretty good job protecting Brady, and I just thought, you know, you're going to get hit when you go against Rex Ryan. I just think that's a symptom of going against that defense. It was worse in the Cowboys game, no doubt about it, but their personnel on the front seven is pretty good, specifically with Ware and Spencer on the other side. So, you know, I would chalk it up more to the Ryan brothers. If we see that against Pittsburgh this week and the following week against the Giants, if that is more of a trend, then, yeah, I would add that to my list as well of offensive concerns.
Okay, great, because I'm, to be honest with you, I am a little concerned. I'm hoping that it's nothing beyond what you just said about the Ryan brothers. Damian, did you have a couple questions for Adam?
I certainly do. Hey, Adam. The first one is, you just mentioned tackling there, and tackling is something that I've been very vocal about so far this season and past seasons, because I think it's becoming a consistent problem in the NFL. And my question to you is, do you feel that since the new CBA was signed and the padded practice was limited, how do you feel that's affected the whole situation with the secondary and tackling around the NFL?
Well, I mean, I would think that, and I don't get to watch the NFL, you know, league-wide probably as much as I get to watch the Patriots outside of this bye week, but I would say league-wide, that would be something that I'd be more concerned about. I'm not positive that that's a problem specific to the Patriots, but if you want to draw a conclusion and say, look, there were less padded practices, I would say the Patriots' tackling has been worse this year than what we've seen in past seasons. I would look at it and say, yeah, I mean, maybe there is a line that you can draw there that, okay, the Patriots haven't been able to be as physical in practice or certainly in training camp, hit as much as they have in years past? Has that carried over into the regular season? That said, I mean, I know the answer Bill Belichick would give you is that, well, every team's going through that same exact situation and, you know, everybody has to deal with it, so we'll deal with it as it comes. I guess I would allow for that. But, you know, part of the issue in the secondary, I do believe, is some of that rotating cast that they've had at that safety position. And as I said earlier, I think Ahedebo has been better, but that was certainly an area of concern because, look, James Sanders was not a lot of things, but he was a pretty sure tackler back there.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. My next question relates a little bit to Ocho Cinco in the third wide receiver position. And it's in relation to kind of Mike Reese posted on his blog last week after the Dallas game that the Patriots only came out in three wide receiver sets six times out of all of their offensive snaps in that game. And it kind of made me think about something, and that was this. With the tight ends and the new style of offense we've really seen over the past two seasons now, do you feel that the third wide receiver position may be a little dead, whereas in the past it was quite an important role in 2007, 2008, 2009? Now with Hernandez and Gronkowski being as dominant as they are in this offense, do you feel that position has been undermined a great deal?
Well, I think it's certainly been de-emphasized, and I think that was even the case to an extent last season as well, once the Patriots moved on from Randy Moss specifically. I think we've seen the Patriots make a more concerted effort to be a physical team on offense, and that ties back in with those dual tight ends. So I thought last year, you know, when you had Crumpler and Gronkowski, you were a more physical team. I mean, I think you had more of that nastiness, more of that attitude last year than you do this year. You know, Hernandez just isn't that kind of tight end. But I do still think that identity is more in that mold that Belichick used to go with when it was Watson and Graham or Graham and Fourier or what have you, when you had, you know, consistently those two tight end offenses. I like the fact that the Patriots have gotten back to that a bit. You know, that said, when he's out there, and he being Chad Ochocinco or whomever the third receiver is, when he's out there, you'd like to see him at least be effective. And last week, you wonder if we reached a boiling point with Chad Ochocinco for Tom Brady. You know, with fans, they've been or fans in the media, I should say, have been all over Ochocinco pretty consistently all season. I don't know that we had seen, you know, physical evidence of that with Tom Brady until that Dallas game, and that would be a concern for me if I were Ochocinco, because once you lose Tom Brady, it's pretty tough to get him back in your corner.
So do you think that that game plan could have been related to the fact that maybe Brady is losing a bit of trust with Ochocinco and Bill Belichick's losing his patience?
I mean, I do. I mean, if they had seen more from Chad Ochocinco, then I think he would have a greater role in the offense. But, you know, you can only go with what he's shown you, you know, in games and also in practices and what the coaches see over the course of the week. And we all know that he's the greatest practice player ever, according to Bill O'Brien. But I just think if he were showing you something, there would be a larger role for Ochocinco in this offense. And maybe you'd see, you know, not a full-on three wide receiver offense, but certainly more of a blend than what we've seen now. I mean, the Patriots, as you pointed out, Damian, via Mike Reese's piece, they've been pretty exclusively a two tight end, two wide receiver offense. That's pretty much what we've seen these last couple of weeks. And I have to believe if Ochocinco had shown them more, they'd be experimenting in three wide a little bit more.
Awesome. My final question, just quickly, is for more for our UK listeners. I've just obviously come back from London and watching the International Series game this weekend, and obviously the Patriots came over in 2009. And after that game, Robert Kraft was quoted as saying that they thoroughly enjoyed the experience. It felt more like a home game for them than it was actually an away game with the huge fan base we've got over here with our recent success. And you know, what are your opinions? Do you think the Patriots would come back over the next couple of years, especially with Roger Goodell recently saying as well they're trying to convince some of the teams that already have been over to come back and relive the experience?
Well, I mean, I just, you know peripherally that it seemed like, especially in Patriots ownership, I mean, that was something that was worth their while. I think the Patriots have shown pretty consistently over the years, whether it was trying to get a game in Asia or whether it was the game in London, that they're interested in expanding their brand internationally. You know, I think they understand, and look, the Krafts are one of the more proactive owners in the league. I think they understand that that's where the league's going. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be 5 or 10 years from now, but at some point the game is going to grow beyond the United States. And I don't mean Canada. I don't mean Mexico City. It's going to go to Europe. I think that's, I think that's fairly apparent when, you know, the league is going through the type of offseason they went through and they're talking about growing revenues. There's only so far you can go in the United States before you tap those revenues out. So I think it's fairly obvious that's where the game is going. And in that regard, yeah, I would expect the Crafts being, you know, proactive, as I stated, and trying to stay ahead of the curve. I would expect them to pursue interest, if not playing another game in London, then maybe somewhere else in Europe, maybe even somewhere in Asia, as they tried to do a couple of years ago.
Awesome. I'll pass you back to us now. That's all I want to ask. Thank you.
Thanks, Damian. Those questions were great. Adam, before I let you go, I definitely want you to tell our audience a little bit about your two shows, the Adam Jones Show and then the Patriots postgame show, because I I'm not sure everyone is familiar with them, so I thought I would give you your chance really just to tell the Patriots fans a little bit about both of your shows.
Sure. Well, we do ESPN Boston Radio every weekday, Monday through Friday from noon to 2 Eastern Time on ESPNBoston.com. It's a call-in show. We talk a lot of Patriots, and we talk a lot of, you know, the local sports story of the day. We're housed right inside Gillette Stadium, so we're there. We're constantly at, you know, the Bill Belichick press conferences. We're there for open locker room. You know, we try to get as many Patriots players on the program as we can. So that's sort of what I do Monday through Friday. And then on Sundays, I've been doing the Patriots postgame show on Patriots.com, which is a two-hour show after each and every game. You know, we play you the Belichick postgame press conference, the Brady postgame press conference, and we get a player to call in as well. Last week it was Rob Gronkowski. We had Pat Chung a couple of weekends before that. So that's kind of the deal of those two shows. You can call in on both. You can get your opinion on the Patriots and where they're at. You can disagree with me. That's more than welcome. But, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing here this football season.
Well, Adam, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. You really gave us some great topics to talk about, and I really appreciate your time. And you know how I feel about your show. I call in your show all the time. You're probably sick and tired of hearing from me, so I thought I would at least have you come on mine.
No, it was appreciated. It was a good time, man.
All right, listen, again, that was Adam Jones. Adam, thank you so much, and maybe you can come on again with us another time during the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks again to Adam Jones from ESPNBoston.com. He just joined us for about 15, 16 minutes. Guys, what did you think about Adam's comments about our questions? Steve, I'll start with you because you really haven't had much to say lately. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Any comments about our discussion?
Yeah, I was curious about something he said because it pertains to the Pittsburgh game this week. One of the things that the Patriots have been very successful at when they've played the Steelers in the past is they've spread the Steelers out. They've been able to identify where the blitzes are coming from, and they use their wide receivers to stretch the field. And they've been able to do that consistently through the years with Tom Brady. I was curious to hear what Adam had to say, if he thought that the Patriots coaches would try to incorporate Ocho more in the game plan this week. But judging from his opinion there, it doesn't seem like he sees that happening. But I was just curious. I think that's one of the things that they've always been successful doing, and I'm wondering if they're going to do it again this week.
You know, Steve, I am too. I mean, you know, it's funny. I wasn't even thinking about that, and I'm glad that Adam brought that up. It's been a common theme with the Patriots and the Steelers of going over the top of that defense. They've been very successful at it, and you know, I mean, the thought does cross my mind: do they incorporate him more into the offense? Do they try to send Welker long? I mean, you know, how do they, or do they have the tight ends just go right up the middle of the field and expose the middle of the field? It's, you know, it's actually a fascinating subject because I'm not sure what they're going to do. Derek, what are your thoughts on anything that Adam talked about?
Well, I'd like to encourage all the listeners to listen to his shows. I think he does a great job. Definitely one of my favorites, especially the post-game show. The post-game show is great. For any of you guys who listen to Patriots.com radio, you know, I'm a big PFW in Progress and Patriots Playbook with John Rook. I really like those shows, and also the Pregame Social. So if you guys like to listen to those shows, you know, Adam's shows are on, you know, at the same time on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but, you know, they also offer Owen Wednesdays too. But, you know, they, you know, he is on Monday and Friday, and he is on after the game, and his postgame show is really one of my favorites. You know, one of the things he talked about after the game, the Raiders game, was James Hedebo. And he mentioned it now, and he also mentioned it after the Cowboys game. And I think I mentioned it on the show last week. And if not, I don't know if any of you do listen to the Patriots playbook. I've talked to John Rook about that a number of times. And I do think that I agree with Adam that James Hedebo had been playing better than Josh Barrett and Sergio Brown have been playing this season. Well, that's not saying much because they both have been pretty poor. I am pleased with what I've seen overall. I would have liked to see James Sanders there. Like Adam Jones says, he was a great open field tackler, definitely one of the best tacklers on the team. And, you know, I think James has done a pretty good job in that role. I do think he does taken advantage in pass, you know, pass coverage a lot, like Patrick Chung, which is concerning. But I do think that overall he understands his role and he, you know, makes the tackle and it really just played pretty well. So I'm interested to see what he offers more going forward.
You know, Derek, you bring up a player that I'm actually interested in as well. I mean, because you're right, we haven't seen much from the two other guys, and I think he hasn't hurt the Patriots. Let me throw out this to the rest of you guys. The one player that I really think is going to continue to make an impact while we're just talking and waiting for Mark Bertrand to come on in a little bit. What are your thoughts on the improvement of Brandon Spikes? Do you think that he could end up being someone that really has an impact on the defense moving forward? I'll go to Damian first. What are your thoughts about – we've talked about Brandon a little bit, but I really want your opinion on what you think he could bring the rest of the season.
If he plays like he's played the last 2 weeks, then we're going to be looking at a pretty sweet linebacker call because by the looks of things, Mayo could very well be back for the Steelers game, which is huge because they've been running the ball pretty well. And if you have that 1-2 combination of Mayo and Spikes on form, they're two of the better run-stuffing linebackers in the league right now. And Mayo certainly, he led the league in tackles last season. So if Spikes can stay healthy and bring that energy and that style of play to every game, it's going to instantly make our defense a hell of a lot better than it has been. And you've seen the improvement. Spikes, you know, we were a bit iffy at the linebacker core early on in the season with really just Mayo. Spikes was fighting off that injury. And then you've got Guyton playing more than you really want him to. We've talked about Guyton not being a free down linebacker. And now Spikes has been healthy the last 2 weeks and seems to be playing pretty well. And he played well in Oakland as well. There seems to be a massive improvement. And we've contained some very, you know, some good running backs with Spikes in the middle there. Unfortunately, he's been without Mayo. And you think with the two, it's only going to get better.
You know what? I really agree with you on that on Spikes. And the reason why I brought up Spikes is I happened to read an article today in the Boston Globe about him and him talking about how he plays with passion and excitement. And you can really see that he brings an intensity that I think that unit needs. Derek, what did you want to add about Brandon Spikes?
Well, that attitude and energy that you both just mentioned is one of the things that we talked about on the last show, or last time I was on the show, I should say. And, you know, going along with what Damian was saying, back to the Oakland game, I think Spikes played better than he had been playing, although in pass coverage he was still getting taken advantage of, in my opinion. Although in the Dallas game, I thought it was his best game as a Patriot, hands down. Pretty much making plays all over the field, and, you know, his celebration, his energy brought that swagger to the defense that I said, you know, was pretty important. And I would also agree with Damian on the fact that if he could play around that level that he has shown the past 2 weeks, I would be really excited for what this linebacker core could offer because, you know, you have guys like Guyton and Fletcher who have offered I've offered a lot to this team in terms of sub roles. And, you know, obviously Mayo is one of the defensive captains and one of the best defensive players on the team. You know, when you have someone like Mayo who's a little bit more quicker, a little bit better in pass coverage, but also is, you know, one of the best run-stuffing linebackers in the league. You also have Spikes, who's going to offer you a little bit more force. You know, he's going to offer you a good tackler. He's definitely a solid tackler, I think. I mentioned that on my Twitter account. For those of you who follow me, Patriots Haven, I mentioned that during the Dallas game that, you know, Mike Damien had mentioned to Adam about the poor tackling going around in the NFL this year. You know, I think Brand is one of the best fundamentally sound tacklers the Patriots have. And, you know, when you have someone who can make the tackle, make the play, and, you know, go ahead and bring that energy to the team, I think it kind of rejuvenates the defense. But maybe they do get a big play, you know, against them, they can go ahead and get back on track with something like that. And I think Brandon Spikes offers a lot.
I think so, too. I actually agree with both of you guys about Spikes. It's obviously why I brought it up, but I was curious if you guys thought that. Steve, what are your thoughts on Spikes and what he could bring the rest of the season?
Well, I think that, like everyone has said, he's stepped up his game. I know I was at training camp every day this year, and as every year, and I was watching him, and until he got hurt, he was the best player on the field on either side of the football, as far as I was concerned. I thought he was really impressive out there. I thought he was, like, very much an impact player, and his injury set him back quite a bit. But, you know, one of the things about Bill Belichick, and we've always heard about it, we've read about it, is the more that you can handle, the more he puts on your plate. And last week I saw that they were blitzing Spikes a lot, which tells me that he has the confidence of the coaching staff now. And I think they're going to put more on his plate, and I think he can handle it. I think this is a guy that I was watching when he was down in Florida for years, and I was hoping that the Patriots were going to pick him up because I really liked his game. And I think, like everyone says, he brings that swagger to the defense. And I read, it was either Pro Football Focus or Pro Football Reference. I read so many websites, they all tend to blend together. But as far as linebackers in the NFL last year, Spikes was the second most consistent tackler in the NFL last year, as far as linebackers go. And that's what you need at that position.
You know, Steve, you bring up a great point about that tackling, about how he plays. And listen, you really saw it in the last game. Not only his tackling, but you said his run blitzing, his regular blitzing. I mean, he was in the mix. It seemed like the entire game. And I agree with you about your thought about Bill Belichick probably putting more on his plate because he is healthy now. And it just makes me think, well, once we see Jerod Mayo back, and now you have Spikes playing at this level, it now gives the Patriots defense many more options because we started to see stunting. We started to see more exotic blitzing. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm encouraged by what I've seen the last couple of weeks. I see it slowly building, and I hope we see it again against the Steelers. I don't know if the Steelers will really show us much because I really believe the Patriots match up really well with them. But I think against the Jets will be another good indication, and then the Giants. But overall, I'm pretty encouraged by what I've seen from the from Brandon Spikes and the Patriots defense. So guys, we have roughly about 15 minutes left in the show. I am expecting Mark Bertrand to join us any minute, so I really don't want to go into too deep into what we were going to talk about before with our Patriots grades. I don't know if we're going to have a chance really to talk about it, and I really, you know, really wanted to. Let me ask you a question. If you had to give an overall, we'll just do this as an overall grade. If you were to give an overall grade to say the coaching so far of the Patriots, what would you give it? Mid-season grade. We'll just go with the coaching. Derek, what are your thoughts about the coaching staff so far?
For the coaching staff, I'd probably go A minus, but I would be close to B plus. I know that's kind of surprising, and they have been good on challenges and a lot of different situations. But some of the things, you know, some of the things like tackling that really stick out of my mind, that does fall on the coaching staff. And I know that we've talked about, you know, limited padded practices, and they didn't have a lot of time to they didn't have a full off season, so I just planned for it. So I will go A minus. But I think it could be a little bit better.
Okay, Damian, what is your grade for just the overall coaching staff and their approach so far, midseason grade?
I'm going to drop it to a B plus. I think it's more of a B plus for me. And the reason I'm dropping it so low is because I think Bill Belichick got it wrong on defense at the start of the year. I didn't like his conservative play. I didn't like the primary man coverage that was getting McCourty burnt every game and I didn't like how we got him matched up against players like Vincent Jackson and that's really what takes it down. I think offensively, again, the Patriots have been pretty much flawless. Bill O'Brien has been pretty solid in play calling and on special teams I've been happy there. I've got no qualms and Derek mentioned the challenges have been perfect so far this year, but for me Belichick got it entirely wrong at the start of the year, and I was one of his biggest critics on the defensive strategy that we came out with, whether that was because of the personnel and not being confident in the shortened off season or not. I feel we got that wrong, so B plus for me.
Okay, for me, I would probably go with an A minus. I think he's been on, but there certainly was an issue with how he's handled the defense. In my opinion, I think we saw the potential of an aggressive defense, and I think he got scared off, and that was unfortunate. So that's why I think we ended up. It's starting now to see more of an aggressive defense, but I would have liked, like you said, Damian, I would have liked to have seen it from the beginning. Well, gentlemen, it looks like we have our second guest who's just about to come on the line. Just joining us right now is Mark Bertrand from 98.5, the Sports Hub. You can hear Mark on the Felger and Mouse show doing the sports updates. And you can also hear him on his own show. Sorry, I'm starting to lose my voice a little bit. On Saturday mornings with Chris Gasper, the Bertrand and Gasper show, which I've said many times is one of my favorite shows. Mark, thank you for joining us tonight.
Russ, thanks for having me. What's going on?
Nothing much. We're just talking. We've just got some good Patriot talk and just bear with me for a second as I just take a little sip of water. I'm trying to conserve my voice at the very end because I've got an interesting topic that I really want to talk to you about.
All right.
And listen, I'm glad that you came on because I know you listened to probably about, I want to say, 4 hours of Jets talk today. So I really wanted to bring you back to Patriots talk.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Because I personally listened to 4 hours of Jets talk, and that was a little too much for my liking. So, but on the subject of that, that's going to bring us to my topic with you that I'm dying to talk to you about. You ready?
All right, I'm ready. What is it? Because I have no idea what this is. You wouldn't even tell me today. So what is it?
I wouldn't. Do you think the cap is crap?
No, I don't. I don't think the cap is crap, which is an argument I have had before with a lot of different people. I don't think it's crap, but I think there are a lot of different ways to manipulate it to help your team in the short term over the course of a year or two. But as a long-term way of building a team, the cap is not crap. The cap is a factor. The cap will come back and bite you in the ass at some point. Even if it doesn't mean you go to cap jail, like some people would call it, it still means that you are not going to have the resources at some point in time without shedding talent off your roster to go get whoever you want in free agency or to restructure a deal to re-up a guy at big money. There are years in which the cap will not allow you to do certain things unless you are willing to rid yourself of players off the roster. So in any given year, you can pretty much do whatever you want. But to be able to do that and to be able to say the cap is crap, You have to let go of players that you would want on your roster. You can't keep everybody. So, no, the cap is not crap. That is not the way it works.
No, you know, Mark, listen, I agree with you, and I had a feeling that you and I were on the same wavelength on this. And if we want to use the Jets as an example, I think they've had to let go a few players now. You could say that maybe they were going to let them go, like a Sean Ellis and a couple of offensive linemen over the past couple of years. Yeah. But if it was unlimited, I think they would have kept those players. So I don't believe the cap is crap. I think it's a budget thing. I think with the Patriots, you know, you can't pay everyone at top dollar. I'm sorry, you can't do it. You can try to manipulate it, like you said, to get players on your roster, but it can come back to bite you. Maybe not put you in cap jail, like someone that I know talks a lot about. But it can be manipulated. But it is a factor. It does affect the Patriots every single year. Players come and players go. It happens with the Jets. It happens with all good teams. Even happens with teams you wouldn't think of. Every team has turnover, and the cap has a great deal to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, the best example for me this year, the best example is the Dallas Cowboys, because the Dallas Cowboys would spend twice the money they spend now if somebody would let them figure out a way to do it. And they would never let anybody leave their team, and they'd sign everybody to huge contracts because Jerry Jones is an idiot. And that would happen in Dallas, but he can't because he has cap things that he has to take care of that force him to spend his money in different ways. He can't keep everybody. You can never keep everybody you want to keep. It just doesn't work that way. Now, over the course of a year or two, or maybe sometimes even three, you can build, I think, the way you can manipulate it. I think that it can be so manipulated that you could build a dream team over the course of two, maybe max 3 years. But then at the end of that, you are letting players go because you're forced to, because you can't keep going like that. You can't keep operating like that. It doesn't work over long periods of time. And we are fortunate enough to be able to watch the Patriots week in and week out, and not only on a weekly basis, but over the last, 15 years, be a competitive team and always be in the mix. That doesn't happen if you don't pay attention to the cap. You cannot go in long stretches like the Patriots have and be successful with completely having no regard for the cap. You just can't operate that way.
You know, Mark, I agree with you, and that's why I wanted to have this discussion with you about the cap. Now, a completely different subject is how the Patriots handle some of their contracts with how they put the fuel to the fire to some of these rookie deals. I don't appreciate how they handle those situations. I'll be the first to say I don't agree with some of their strategies. But when it comes to handling the cap, I think that they do it as best as anyone. And that, to me, is the larger point. Can they sign everyone that they want to sign? I don't think they can, and I don't think any team can. They can over, like you just said, a course of a couple of years, but then they're going to have to let players go. We've seen it. So,
yeah, I'm
glad that that you kind of see that. Anyone else want to chime in? Steve, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I had a Patriots-related question. I know I appreciate you coming on, Mark. I know you've been dealing with the Jets all day, but I had a question that didn't relate to the cap.
No, go ahead.
I was curious if you think that we're going to see Brace or Dedrick get activated to the active roster in the next couple of weeks.
You know, I think the way he's kind of been hanging around makes me believe that at some point you're going to see him. And I think that, had it not been an issue where being on the PUP was preventing him from practicing, I think he probably would have practiced earlier had he been allowed to. So, a couple of weeks, I would say definitely the next month. I would say somewhere in there you're probably going to see him active for one of these games. And, I mean, in my opinion, I think they could use any kind of help they can get there. Not to say it's a bad situation, but to have the kind of depth, and I think Brandon Dedrick played well at times last year. So I would think that they would want to activate him if there's an opportunity there sometime in the next three, maybe 4 weeks. So, I would think that he does get activated.
Okay. Damien, did you have any questions for Mark?
Yeah, I have one, and I'm not the biggest expert on the cap myself, but the Patriots always seem to give themselves a lot of leverage at the top, and they have done this year. And I just wanted to get your insight on that, and could you just tell us a bit about their strategy when it comes to they always seem to have that sort of $10 million at the top where they leave it free and they don't really ever do much with it.
Yeah, you know, I think at times they're a little too conservative. As much as I believe in the cap as being a factor, I think there are times when you could say, well, they could have done a little bit more. You know, you question things, minor moves, like could they have kept James Sanders? Could they have kept him on the roster? I know you guys have talked a little bit about that already tonight. You know, having a guy like Ahedebo versus having a player like Sanders, how much do you lose there and what kind of value do you put on the position, on the player, in terms of wins and losses over the course of a year? And I know that they keep that $10 million open, and Jonathan Kraft has talked about this before. You know, they kind of leave that room at the top so that if anything happens during the course of the season, they have flexibility to sign players or flexibility to make a move if they ever had a major injury and they need to address it. You know, now the trade deadline is gone, so that, you know, by trade you're not going to see any major moves. But you never know. You never know if by the trade deadline you think you might need a piece and you want to add a piece and maybe you want to sign that player up. I know they looked at Brandon Lloyd last week. They were in a position where they wanted to offer Brandon Lloyd a contract extension, and they were willing to give up a mid-round pick if they could get him to do that, from what I understand. That's a situation where you have that flexibility in this given year where you could possibly front-load that deal and have it be in better shape for the next couple of years as they continue to, you know, as I said, just keep cycling through and continuing to be competitive. I think that $10 million is a lot of money, so to have that open at the top, sometimes you think, well, couldn't you be a little bit more aggressive? But I do understand why you would want some money available over the course of the year, because you never know, and you never want to be in a position where, because you lost two or three players, you lose a season. I think that's their worst fear, is losing two or three guys to big injuries and being in a position where they can't replace those guys on their roster, and because of that, they lose a season. And especially now, I always talk about Tom Brady's window closing. These are very important seasons. They can't afford to just lose seasons because two or three guys have serious injuries.
Mm. Great. Thanks for that. Thanks very much.
Great.
Yeah, no problem.
Derek, would you like to ask Mark a question?
Yeah, Mark, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
Good.
Thanks for coming on, by the way, today.
No problem.
I just wanted to say I agree with a lot of your thoughts on the cap. The one thing that you just said, though, about the whole James Sanders thing, that move really surprised me personally, because when, you know, especially when someone like Bill Belichick says, I would love to have 53 James Sanders,
yeah,
and even though he is probably getting overpaid for what you were getting back, you know, when you leave that safety position that had so much depth last season, a little more shallow this season in both bodies and in talent, that was a move I was a little surprised to make. Was that a move that you were surprised?
Russ will tell you I was not at all surprised by the James Sanders move. Russ, how early did I call that move, Russ?
You called that very early.
Yeah, I think I called that in like before the end of the lockout. I was calling the James Sanders would be cut in the preseason move. That one doesn't surprise me at all. And as much as he will say, you know, I'd love to have 53 James Sanders on this roster, at the end of the day, it comes down to what they evaluate him as a player in terms of what he can do on the field in a given game situation. That's what's going to determine, you know, what happens with this team. And I think that as part of this strategy of being mindful of the cap, I think one of the things, you know, philosophically that the Patriots never want to do, and this is pretty much the core of this debate when you're talking about the Patriots and the way they spend their money, is they never want to overpay for a player. And they never want to be in a position where they have to pay James Sanders because, you know, he's at the end of a deal and he's a good veteran leader and he's a hard worker. They don't want to have to pay for those things. And sometimes you say, well, maybe it'll help your team this year. But as part of this philosophy, it's never overpaying for guys. And that's really what people will argue back and forth about, whether or not you should overpay for a player for the short term, for short-term benefit, for this season, so that you don't have to have James Ahedebo in there. By the way, love James Ahedebo, great guy. Went to one of the finest institutions of greater higher learning in the world. What's that?
Would that be UMass, Mark?
Yes, yes. James Hannibal and I graduated together. So love James Hannibal. Much love to him. But he's a downgrade from James Sanders. There's no doubt about that. And here's the biggest thing. You know, it's funny you mentioned Bill Belichick in this. I don't think that this system and this philosophy, which I enjoy, don't worry, I enjoy this as someone who watches the Patriots and have my entire life. They don't get this to work as well as it has worked without Bill Belichick, because you can't do it with lesser guys without great coaching. And I think that sometimes gets completely lost in the shuffle, that the only way you can afford to just let James Sanders go and move on is because you have the coaching to have a good enough team so that you're not worrying about the drop-off between James Sanders and James Adebo. It's just not that big of a deal in the big picture. I don't think that the loss of James Sanders will directly contribute to how many wins the Patriots have this year. It takes much more than just that for it to make a major difference. So if you can save yourself the money, retain that flexibility, and in years forward have that money available, even if it's this year when you're front-loading deals or restructuring deals, whatever you want to be doing, it's just not that big of a drop-off. I'm not sure it's worth the money, and I didn't think James Sanders was going to be worth the money.
Well, let me ask you this then, because you did say that you weren't surprised by the James Sanders move. So for me, I was surprised more of that move because with the Brandon Merriweather letting him go as well. Now, I was expecting Merriweather to be gone, but I wasn't expecting both of them to be gone. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think at the time, and we were all talking at the time about this change to a 4-3 and what it was going to mean for the Patriots. And, you know, the Patriots, I still think, give up a decent amount of yardage through the air. And no one is looking at the Patriots and saying they're great against the pass. And I think Pat Chung, I think people within the organization now expected him to improve even more so than what he was last year. And I know he's had the thumb injury to deal with, but I think he is coming into what I think will be. I think he will be one of the best players at his position in the NFL. I believe Pat Chung is that good. And, you know, I think they kind of conceded the point that even if it was if they had kept Brandon Merriweather, who I was not a fan of whatsoever, and they kept James Sanders, how much better are they really against the pass than what they are now without those two guys? They're probably not that much improved. They're a little bit better. You know, you're not going to see guys getting out into space and taking off. You know, you might make a change there, but I just don't think it's that big of a drop-off for the kind of money they were spending on those two players, and they obviously didn't think so. They moved on. I don't really fault them for it, and I think that they thought this philosophical change in defense was going to lead to a lot more pressure and was really going to affect quarterbacks and get them out of their rhythm, and that was going to make up for the difference. I don't think it has, but I still don't think they've really suffered because of it.
All right, Mark, thanks. I'll pass it back over to Russ.
Cool.
Russ, you there?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry about that. I had a little disconnection. Mark, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Everyone's still there?
We're still good.
We're still good.
Okay. Well, Mark, I think we're going to have to wrap this up. I did leave it a little open-ended so we could go a little bit further. But before I let you go, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Russ. Russ, anytime you want me to come on, just let me know.
That's what I wanted to hear, Mark. You know, the next person I'm going to try to get on, you know who I'm going to try to get on?
Who are you going to try to get on?
I'm going to try to get Mr. Michael Felger on. Do you think he would ever come on my show?
Now, that will be a task. I'll do my best to help in that, but that will be a difficult task, my friend.
We could talk about the Jets for an hour.
Yeah, just tell him what to do, Russ. Just drop him an email and say, you know, I do this podcast on the New York Jets once a week, and would you like to be a part of it? We want to talk about how great Rex Ryan is and how the attitude of the New York Jets is really going to propel them and make them turn a corner.
Well, what I thought
about the cultural change. Just talk about the cultural change within the Jets organization. I think we'll be right on this thing in no time.
Well, I thought I would first try to get Mike Tannenbaum on, and then I thought that would get him to come on.
How the Patriots beat San Diego. San Diego beats themselves, but when the Jets beat them, the Jets are just showing some great guts and determination.
That's another good one. That's right. That's right. San Diego's terrible when they play the Patriots, but they're a top AFC team when they take on the Jets. Hey, at least today there was plenty of hammering of Norv Turner for the idiot that
he
is.
Yes, absolutely. Mark, listen, thank you again. Would you like to just do a little tell our audience if they're not familiar with your two shows as we get ready to end our show soon? Could you
No problem. You know, as you know, I'm on 2 to 6 with the Sports Hub headlines during Felger and Maz on the Sports Hub 98.5 in Boston and on the web cbsbostonsports.com. That's where you can stream us. And then on Saturday mornings with my my buddy Chris Gasper, we do a program from 8 to 11 a.m. And for the most part during football season, it's a lot of football talk. But for some reason, between the Red Sox collapse and everything else that's kind of been going on, we've been talking about a lot of other stuff. But I think from here on out, we'll be primarily a football-based show for the rest of football season. So if you're around on a Saturday morning, make sure you tune into myself and Chris Gasper, as you probably know from the Boston Globe. We're on Saturday mornings, 8 to 11 on the Sports Hub.
Well, listen, thank you very much, Mark. That was Mark Bertrand joining us from 98.5, the Sports Hub. Mark, thank you, and I certainly will have you back again.
Russ, Steve, Derek, Damian, see you guys later.
Thanks, Mark.
See you later.
Mark.
Take care.
Great. Thanks, Mark. All right, guys. Well, we are getting to the time to wrap up this show. That was a great show, I have to admit. Before I do that, Damian, did you have something that you wanted to talk about the international game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to plug it a little, you know, since it was a massive part of my weekend, and the main reason why I'm sitting here falling asleep at my desk at 1:07 in the morning. I just got back yesterday, technically, from London, and we had a great time up at Wembley watching the Buccaneers play the Bears. It was a lovely little close game. We had a squirrel on the pitch. We had a streaker high-fiving all the Buccaneers players on the kickoff. We had 5 interceptions. We had a safety. You know, we had it all, and we had the Mexican wave going as well a little bit there in the second half. So, you know, what I would say to a lot of, you know, Patriots fans is it's extremely likely that the Patriots will come back over here. And whether, I don't know if they'll give up a home game or not, but I expect them to be back. And, you know, if they do, I'd hope you guys on the show here, and certainly as many Patriots fans, will come over and be a part of that, because the International Series is a wonderful thing. And I think that, you know, you've got guys like me coming on shows like this, and the NFL's really, really expanding at the moment. And we've got to definitely open our arms to it and open our arms to potential franchises in the future outside of the US and games further afield than even just the UK. So just thought I'd put my 2 cents out there on that.
Well, thanks for sharing that. You know, to be honest with you, Damian, I would love for the opportunity to get over to the UK. I've never been, I hate to admit it. And I have several reasons why I would want to go. A great reason would be if the Patriots go over there. So I hope that does happen. Guys, I'm about to wrap up the show. I want to thank my co-hosts, Damian, Steve, and Derek, for joining me. I thought this was a great show. I'm very happy with our discussions. I thought it was great. I also want to thank our two guests who called in, Adam Jones from ESPNBoston.com and from the Patriots postgame show on Patriots.com. And then, of course, we just talked to Mark Bertrand from 98.5, the Sports Hub, and who has his show, Bertrand and Gasper. And then, of course, he is on Felger and Maz. So I want to thank them. I want to thank, my co-host. And we will be back to you again, hopefully for a Patriots preview against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And everyone have a wonderful night. Thank you again for your time.